Teachers need thick skin. Though this is what a parent said to me, one parent-teacher meeting some years ago. I still remember it, and it's really stuck in my head. It was a clarifying moment for me. And likely it had something to do with something a student said, I imagine, although I don't remember. It sounds like, you know, the need for thick skin implies that I'm having to protect myself from sharp objects, but thankfully that wasn't the case. We all realize that usually we say this in reference to words. So this saying has stuck with me over the years, and I've many times... let me pause just a little bit. Does everyone have a paper? Some more...
We'll make room, yes. There's actually some chairs up here. Well, no, here's two chairs.
Come on in.
There's a number over there. Let's pick up here.
Okay. I guess I'll have to edit this recording a little bit. So, a while back, I was at a parent-teacher meeting, and we were talking about something, probably something a student said, and they just reminded me that teachers do need to have thick skin. And I've many times felt the truth of that. From hurtful words, it's not about the sharp objects, it's actually about the words. Although I've actually heard a story of and I have not verified it, but read it in a book, that some teacher was literally stabbed to death by his students with their pens. But I don't know, it sounds terrible. That was a long time ago, and they had like feather pens or something like that. But teachers do need thick skin. So in this talk, I want to look at the reality of criticism, the deliverers of criticism, the pain of criticism, and then finally what we really are here for, which is the mastery of criticism, how we can master it, maybe even use it. And I'm thinking of criticism as kind of anything that is hurtful. Students often say things that aren't maybe considered classically as criticism, but it hurts, and so I'll consider that to be criticism too. So let's talk about first, I think there's maybe two unrealistic views we tend to have about criticism. And I don't think we would say we have these views, at least I wouldn't. I think we have these at a gut level, and we don't even hardly realize we think this way. But I fall into this sometimes. One is being too idealistic about criticism. We get this, and maybe we have this most right now going into this new school year, but you get this idyllic view of with students and parents who never bite and a teacher who never gives them reason to. And it's just not realistic. I do want to show you something. It's supposed to be funny. A teacher shared it with me a while back, and it just made me laugh, and I think applies to this pretty well. So, you got the dinosaurs there. So some days you feel like that. Some days, yeah. Sadly, it's reality. Any of you first year teachers here? Okay. Well, so it's only some days. It's not always like that, and there are other times where it's teaching is definitely awesome. Why would we be doing it otherwise? Okay. So that is a picture we sometimes fall into, this idealistic view, no criticism, and that you don't really have reason to criticize. And then we get into real life school and maybe get crushed by it, by the reality, those dinosaurs. And then the other side is maybe being too pessimistic, a cynical view where criticism is just something you roll your eyes at. It's something you put up with, like taxes or bad luck. It's just a fact of life. You get through just water off a duck's back type thing. No good can come from them. And those who criticize us are just terrible people out to get us. Now, we probably would never say we think that way, but I think in the back of our minds, we do have, at a gut level, we have those thoughts. Reality, let's look at reality a little bit. The reality is good and bad. So we are going to get criticized because teaching is very public. We do everything we do kind of in public. So we give teachers and students and parents a lot of opportunities to criticize us. They watch us all the time. There's a saying, to avoid criticism, do nothing, say nothing, be nothing. So yeah, if you want to avoid criticism, that's my best advice. It's not my advice, it's someone else's. But anyway, we don't want to be like that. Another reality, we are sinners. We are sons of Adam and daughters of Eve with many qualities worthy of criticism. And I think we all know that. We have many flaws, more than we think. Charles Spurgeon said, "Brother, if any man thinks ill of you, do not be angry with him, for you are worse than he thinks you to be. If he charged you falsely in some point, yet be satisfied, for if he knew you better, he might change the accusation, and you would be no gainer by the correction. If you have your moral portrait painted and it is ugly, be satisfied, for it only needs a few blacker touches, and it would be still nearer the truth." It's kind of harsh. It is a little harsh and depressing, maybe, but I think things get better. We do deserve criticism at times. And then the other part of it is that the people around us are sinners as well, who are motivated by envy and that kind of thing. They might want to criticize us for wrong reasons sometimes. This one should make you a little afraid, but also a little proud. Christian teachers are the enemy of Satan, who is the master of destructive criticism. Satan has declared war on us, and he would love to get us a little discouraged or cynical. He would love to, you know, nudge a student, or better yet, a parent, to criticize us unjustly. Or maybe there's a little bit of truth to the criticism, which makes it hurt worse. And then here's a scary thought, but also a very good thought, that Christian teachers are sons and daughters of God who uses criticism to sculpt our character. So whether it's just or unjust, God can use it, and he will use it. And we need to surrender to that, which is hard to do. And the question is, how do we know whether the criticism is from God or Satan? I don't know how the spiritual realm works, but I think lots of times it can be both, because God uses temptations to test us sometimes. Anyway, just a little bit about, so getting to real life school a little bit, who criticizes us? Who would want to criticize a teacher? Students do sometimes. Sometimes there tend to be the lower forms of criticism, maybe about your appearance or something like that. I remember I was teaching, I think, a math class once, and I don't know what I was teaching about, but probably was taking myself super seriously. This is a big deal. And one of the boys raised his hand. I said, "Yeah?" He said, "Mr. Scripps, you have a pimple on your forehead." Since we were talking about circles, I asked him what the circumference was. Just kidding. But yeah, that'll really just, you know, pop your bubble just like that, right? Take the wind out of your sails. What are you going to do when that happens? Having a sense of humor really helps. You know, corrections, when students correct you, that kind of hurts. Or hurts not the right word. It annoys you. I remember writing quizzes, the word quizzes on the board once with one Z. And somebody... Because quiz is one Z, but when you say quizzes, I believe it's two Zs, right? Yeah. And some of the smarter girls caught that. Said, "Are you trying to say quizzes or something?" But anyway, Those don't feel good. Or lots of times they dislike a decision you make. There's always going to be that. If you make a decision, we're going to play this game, probably is going to be someone who doesn't like that game. But it's okay. So far, sorry, I'm just talking about all the bad stuff. But we'll get to the good stuff. But just remember, too, that this criticism really shouldn't be allowed. It's not just a thing you just put up with and let them do, either. To definitely clarify that. We shouldn't allow a whole lot of complaining or criticism. But I think they will happen. They do make good stories. Then the question is, maybe how seriously should we take their criticism? Should we think about it at all? You have different ages, different maturity levels. Think about the maturity level of the student a little bit. What about parents? This is something that could be much harder to take. And I think I've been pretty blessed. I don't think I've had that much criticism from parents. I've definitely, for the most part, felt like the parents were on my side. I'm very thankful for that. But still, they see things sometimes, and they have a perspective that we don't, and it is a valuable perspective. And we want to receive their criticism very respectfully. They are their kids, and they really love their kids. And try to teach and interact with them in a way that is clear that we are open to what they have to say. Ask them what they have to say. They have any advice for us? There's been stories of people of parents who just sort of say things thoughtlessly that kind of put teachers down here. I know, Jonathan, I've heard a story that you have about that. Do you mind if I just, maybe you should just share it? You probably don't know what I'm talking about. Well, I heard him say, you were talking to a parent once, and they said, you were talking about a struggling student, if I remember right, and they said that, we don't expect too much from this girl. Just when she's older, she'll probably won't do a whole lot. She'll probably just be a teacher or something. did I get that right?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. And you kept teaching after that. Wow. You kept going. Very good. And yeah, I haven't had anything to that level, but just sort of things where, school isn't that big a deal. That kind of hurts a little bit. Maybe comments about the quality of our schooling. Coworkers, move on to that a little bit. Might get criticism from coworkers. They might see something. This could be very valuable. One thing my co-teacher and I are going to try this year is actually sort of formally meeting and kind of keeping each other accountable. Like, I have these goals that I want to make sure I'm doing, and we talk to each other about them, and hopefully we can be a little more open to how we can improve our teaching quality. Okay, so a little bit about the pain of criticism. It's kind of interesting that criticism hurts. So it's emotional pain, it's not physical pain. And the amount of pain we suffer really depends on our perspective. I could say the same thing to two different people in this room, the exact same thing in the same way, and it would really hurt one person and not hurt the other person. Why is that? Anyone have any answers real quick? Yeah.
It also depends how much you respect the person that criticizes you.
Yeah, right? It does. Depends on our relationship. Exactly. Depends on the circumstances that the person has been through, whether they have these sensitive areas, things that happened to them, their childhood, all that kind of stuff. So it's funny, it's just sound waves, but they hurt. So why do sound waves hurt people, but they don't hurt cats? They might hurt dogs a little bit, but I haven't seen a cat really respond to them. But emotional pain is real. I wish sometimes that we had a pain rating scale like we do for physical pain. rate your, the nurse will say, rate your pain on a scale of 1 to 10. And what if we had an emotional pain scale, like 1 being you're honked at in traffic and 10 being you're betrayed by a friend or something like that? That is real. And then the thing is, the interesting thing about physical pain is it hurts whether we like it or not, but emotional pain is somewhat under our control to some degree. Now, I'll see if, I'm curious what you guys think about this. You can raise your hands. So, would you rather question? So, would you rather have someone you respect tell you of a big flaw in your teaching, a total blind spot you never thought about, and then they were just revealing this to you? Would you rather them that, or would you rather break a leg? So, who would rather... Who would rather break the leg? Okay. Wasn't sure what people would think about that. That's interesting. Okay. So, anyway, but it's real. Emotional pain is real. And I wonder how honest people are being there. But okay, so let's look a little bit about why it hurts. Maybe this can help us clarify and have a little more power over it, over criticism, and not let it get to us so much. I don't have perfect analogies for this, for why it hurts, but there's some things I've thought of that hopefully make sense. So I'm thinking of, so each of us has our ego, and I'm thinking of that like this inner idol that we have inside of us, sort of like Nebuchadnezzar's statue, only small, and it's inside of us. And it's really, it can be very fragile. We vary on this a lot. Some of us don't deal with it as much, probably. But it's who we think we are, or maybe who we wish we were. It's this image of ourselves that we have. And I think we maybe tend to worship it like an idol, too.
Is it like pride?
Like pride, yep. It's pride, it really is. Ego, pride, there's probably other words for it. It's interest in self. It's kind of where you find your identity. So a lot of us might try to find our identity as a teacher. I've been unbalanced in that way, I know, a lot before. It was really good for me to have, when I had kids, I realized that, you know, actually, what's happening here at home with my kids is more important to me than what's happening in my classroom. And so my identity was not so tied up in being a teacher unhealthily much. So then that identity gets tarnished, it hurts. And it can be really fragile. We get upset. So, and then another reason that might explain the reason criticism hurts too is that we do have a genuine need to be loved as we are. I think God made us that way. And so besides God, who's the person that generally loves us the most? I should probably say, probably always loves us the most, besides God. Sort of a trick question. Maybe. That's the answer I was looking for. I mean, we could argue about this. Your mom might love you more than you love yourself, but that's the answer I was looking for. Love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. I think we love ourselves a lot. I think there's a reason they put that in the second greatest commandment. So we need to be loved, and we tend to love ourselves. We want to get that love from somewhere, so often we just love ourselves. But I think we need to let other people love us, let God love us. Anyway, so there's that pain, and then two ways people deal with the pain. Two ways I think of that. There might be more. I think that we probably have all been in either one of these. I don't think it's like each of us is either one or the other. I think it varies, depending on our mood and that kind of thing. So one I'm going to call the martyr. They're people that more, when they get criticized or something like that, they tend to get crushed. Oh, self-pity, poor me. Oh, this hurts. They tend to probably get their worth from the approval of others more. And they may be more aware of the flaw that their idol has. They do realize that their idol has flaws. They don't like it. Prone to self-pity. Here's an example I heard once. A counselor was talking to a married couple. I don't know what was wrong with their marriage or whatever, but somehow they got into this topic, and the wife started saying just how much she loves Jesus. I just love Jesus so much. He brings comfort to me, and all this glowing reports of a relationship with Jesus, which was awesome. But the husband said he was jealous. He said, how am I supposed to compete with that? So a really, really unhealthy self-focus. Poor me. Or if we realize it, what are you doing? You're jealous of Jesus in this case. And I would confess that I've been in places like that before, where it's not as easy to recognize. Self-pity isn't maybe as easy to recognize on the outside as the next one, but it's a real thing that we need to look inside ourselves for. I'll just call the next one the grizzly bear because I couldn't think of a better analogy. But people more like an angry bear that get angry when their idol is criticized. And once again, it's not like you're either one or the other. You've probably done both of these things. Probably tend towards one, though. It seems like their self-worth is not so dependent on others. They're a little more stable on their own. Maybe not as aware of their image's flaws. And they'd be more prone to lash out if they're criticized, I would say. Grizzly bear. You know, throw it back in their face. Examples of that, I think of Nebuchadnezzar a little bit. Not trying to get political at all here, but I think of the best person I could think of about this was Donald Trump. Doesn't seem to be fazed at all by what people say, but just gives it back to him. And thinking of these two different types of people, I don't know how many of you here have older brothers, but maybe the way they deal with their older brother comes into play. The one, when their older brother told them to do something, they maybe tended to just, okay. And inwardly, it was like the martyr. Poor me. I'll do it. I'm being a servant. And the other one's like, go get it yourself. So maybe think about that, you know, in your childhood, what did you do? Maybe that'll show you what tendency you have a little bit. Okay, so let's move on to how we can actually deal with criticism. I don't know if mastery is a good word, because I don't know if we'll ever master it, but... So I said earlier that teachers need thick skin. I think there is a flaw in that saying, because thick skin implies callousness and hardness. We don't want that. It misses the compassion and the listening ear that a teacher needs to have. Thick skin implies just bounces right off of me and I don't think about it. I think we need something more than that. If dealing with criticism well is an issue of character, it is a deep thing that I'm going to have a hard time putting into words. There are some practical things, and we'll get into that, but really it's an issue of character. What's going on inside of us? So we need real humility, not just acted out humility, but real humility, which it just goes right to the root, the whole core of the gospel in a lot of ways. And you can't hardly get it except through the power of God. So let's think about this a little bit, though, as far as how we can get to that place where the idol inside of us is no longer so important. Think of the prodigal son a little bit. So he went out and partied, spent his father's money, and then ended up in the pig pen. And he came to the end of himself. I think at that point the idol was toppled or something like that. Or maybe it's like this. Maybe he had this false image of himself, and that was the idol. And he realized that That's actually not who I am. Who I actually am is someone in the pig pen with the pigs, and I got myself here. So he was eventually, his false image was destroyed, he was broken, he was contrite. Something changed in the inside. And he went back to his father, and he stopped loving himself so much, started to let his father love him instead. He came to see that this view of himself he had been loving was actually not really real. He saw himself as he actually was, which was a sinner, a bad person, but someone who's actually loved by his father anyway. So getting to that place of brokenness, where we realize it's not about us, this story is about God, not about us. And I think we need God to bring us to that place. This is not an easy fix. We need to seek God's help with this. And thinking about afterwards then, so it's funny because the prodigal son had an older brother who seemed to be sort of mean, kind of the classic older brother maybe. So when his older brother later would criticize him, it wouldn't have been such a big deal. When I already know I'm not that great of a person. You're not telling me anything new, and I don't find my worth in that image of myself. I find my worth because my father loves me. Psalm 16:2 says, just a phrase of it, but I have no good apart from you. Can we say that to God? I have no good apart from you. But it is a firm and strong place to be. It's not this weak, cowering place. It's not self-pity. It's firm because we believe what God says about us, regardless of what others say. So it actually comes down to faith. Do you have faith in what God says about you, about that God does love you? Okay, a little more practical. Don't take yourself too seriously. It's kind of along the same lines, but said in more practical ways. So, General Douglas MacArthur, he was a pretty famous general in World War II for the Americans. He fought in the Philippines against the Japanese. He's the one who famously had to leave the Philippines, and he promised them, "I shall return." And when you, he was probably a good general in a lot of ways, but when you look into his life, you realize when he said, "I shall return," it doesn't sound quite so heroic anymore, because you realize how seriously this guy took himself. So, he wanted to make the image of a hero. He made that image of himself. So he had a special hat he always wore to keep up his image. He had the aviator glass sunglasses that you may have seen before. The famous picture of him wading ashore on the Philippines once he returned to liberate them from the Japanese. And that was staged. Had to get it just right. At one point he only let people take pictures of him from the right side of his face. And here's the one that makes me laugh, is that he talked about himself, at least sometimes, in the third person. So, General MacArthur thinks. So if you talk about yourself in the third person, I think you take yourself pretty seriously. Here's some things we should say to ourselves. Teaching school is bigger than you. This school, getting this job done, you cannot do it on your own. Your school could survive without you. This is not your story. This is God's story. Sounds like we're just beating everyone up here, but I think we should. Like I said before, it is a strong place and a confident place, living in the correct view of ourselves, but it's because of God, not because of us. One other thing or two is that you could say And we're just one pawn in the giant chess game God is playing. And then remember this too, that the graveyards are full of indispensable men and women. So they're actually not indispensable, basically. Am I using the right word there? For some reason, I'm doubting myself. Okay. So let's remember also, with not taking yourself too seriously, that when you read a story, you don't want the hero to be perfect. They always make mistakes, and it's good. I actually heard of a study. I didn't verify this. It was just hearsay, so hopefully it seems true to me, that they did a study where they had people watch 4 different videos, all the same person? Anyway, they all showed someone doing a job interview. 2 of them, I think, showed the person being pretty incompetent or maybe not treating the other guy very nicely. The other 2 showed a very competent person who's kind and but forthright and genuine. The last one showed the same, but during that time, he spilled coffee on himself. So, and then they asked people, which of these 4 interviewees do you like the best? And the one who won was the guy who spilled coffee on himself. So, humans like other humans. We wouldn't like superheroes if we actually had them in our lives, I think. We don't like robots who do everything perfectly. We like other humans, and being human means you mess up sometimes. I think seeing other people mess up comforts us a little bit. Maybe that's not a good motive, but... And then, of course, I said this before, but we really do need a sense of humor with criticism. Mostly, it's probably especially from students, maybe not parents so much. But so I heard a story of something a student really should not have done, but it does make me laugh a little bit. So I think he was about a 1st or 2nd grader. He had a teacher, a lady teacher, who was coming into school, and she was always talking about her awesome boyfriend. We'll call him Donovan. You know, Donovan did this, Donovan did that. Probably not a good idea for a teacher to be singing his praises all the time. Apparently it was enough that the students started to get tired of it. And one day the teacher came into school and said something like, "Class, I have some exciting news." And the little guy piped up and said, "Donovan died?" But so, looking on, that's funny. For the teacher, that would have been pretty hard, especially if you really like Donovan. You know, I don't know if that'd been funny for the teacher at the time. Most likely not. Definitely not. But let's try to remember. Let's try to step back a little bit. Maybe view our lives as a story a little bit. Would you think this was funny if this happened to someone else? That can help. So also, this is a little bit different note, but make sure we don't let criticism keep us in a cage. Like, just the fear of criticism. Like I said before, to avoid criticism, do nothing, say nothing, be nothing. And this is a lesson that I think I maybe need this one the most. Don't let fear of it hold you back. I mean, do we want to get to the end of our life and be able to say that, yep, I was able to avoid all criticism? My life goal. What would you say about a character like that in a story? I would almost say that criticism is an indication that you're doing something right. Two pastors were talking to each other once, and the one was trying to get some advice from the other, and he said that it just seems like my church people, just either they love what I say or they hate what I say. And the other guy said, "Well, that's good. That if you're saying the truth, people won't feel neutral about it. It's going to be either one way or the other. I don't know if that's 100% true, but I think there's some truth in that at least. So I think we can take a little bit of that into school. We're doing the right thing. There should be some criticism. There probably will be. We are blessed to at least, I think lots of us are, to teach in communities where people treat us pretty nicely, and we see things a lot the same way, so that definitely tempers that a little bit, tempers it. Apparently John Wesley once wrote in his journal that he was worried that he was doing something wrong because he had received no criticism that day. So don't let fear of criticism hold you back. Don't be afraid to fail forward. I love those two words. Fail forward. It's okay. We're going to trip. Keep going forward. So for myself, I don't know if I mean this 100%, but I intend to receive more criticism this year. Okay. So then, of course, you know, what do we do once someone has actually criticized us? How do we respond? This phrase, this sentence, has helped me. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. So listen. And remember this, the quote of Deborah Riegel. If you already believe you know better than the person you're listening to, you're not listening. If you already have advice to give, you're not listening. If you already know how this story turns out, you're not listening. If you're already listening only to the parts of the story that confirm your beliefs, you're not listening. And if you already have your counterattack planned, you're not listening. I think that's true. We should listen. What's that? Listen to learn, not listen to respond so much. Sometimes, the whole time someone's talking, we're just thinking about what am I going to respond to this, instead of I really want to understand what they're actually saying here. It needs a lot of humility. Ask questions. But I would say this. I need to remember this. We don't need to just roll over and just, you know, receive everything as gospel truth and not actually say what we think someone. I've done that too much. I think we should be honest in a gentle way. And if we have an objection to what they're saying, I think it's okay to say it. But let's just try to do it in a kind and gentle way. You just don't want to get to the place where you just take in what they say and just say, okay. Yeah, I'll try to do better. And then you go home and really on the inside you're thinking, he totally has it wrong in this way. And maybe he objectively does have it wrong. I think if you're actually thinking that, it might be better to say it, you know, somewhat. Be kind, be careful, use balance here. But we should be honest and genuine. I guess genuine is the biggest thing there. So remember, if someone criticizes you, this is an opportunity to grow. This could be a moment of clarity in an often confusing life. This might be the hand of God. I mean, it probably is. Probably is. God chastens those whom he loves. And the place of brokenness is where real peace and joy start. But also remember that not all criticism is created equal. Criticism from students is not the same as criticism from parents. It should not be taken as seriously. And I mean, we know the people who criticize us usually. What's their reputation? Are they actually looking out for your best interests? And I think we should probably err on the side of giving them the benefit of the doubt, for sure. Humility. Our feelings are really going to get in the way of clear thinking with this a lot of the time. Anyway, I just thought of this, that maybe a good... animal you could think of would be an elephant, because elephants have thick skin, and I don't feel like they would take themselves very seriously because they're just hilarious to look at, you know, long nose, big ears. They don't take themselves very seriously, thick skin, but yet they care for each other. They're gentle and kind. So maybe with criticism, think of the elephant a little bit. Okay. So, wow, perfect. 5 minutes, I think. Does anyone have any questions or comments? I'd love to hear from other people. Yeah. Uh-huh. Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. That would also like promote really a lot of clarity too, not just all these feelings. Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I've found is not to take it personal, because if you think about it long enough, I think that God's Spirit in us can really, if we are erring, we will learn. And if we're hurt by it, we needed to hear it.
Right.
Because Jesus' Spirit can make it possible to lessen the actual pain if we are humble like we're supposed to. If it really hurts, I found it has some work to do.
That's a good observation. So is there any merit to that saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words shall never hurt me? I've always thought that was just a dumb saying, because it's just not true. But then I thought, well, are we supposed to be saying it as sort of a motivator for ourselves? And I was thinking, is there any good reason that words hurt us? There's no physical pain going on. It's just this knowledge that hurts our ego. But I think it also does go against our need to be loved, but... Yeah, yeah.
Back on your question about choosing the broken leg or the criticism, I'm just thinking about the quote you're giving there. And I was pondering how that I'd like to know the outcome. If I'm going to have pins and in and out of the hospital, well, then that one's cranking up in my mind.
Yeah.
And then I got to thinking about the emotional pain. But we finally have to come to what you gave an ingredient, and that is in faith. Lord, for tomorrow's needs, I do not pray. Just today.
Yeah.
So sometimes we have to put that outcome of what the criticism is going to be into God's hands.
Yeah.
Just commit it to Him.
Yeah.
And if there is a big hole in my teaching theory, or there is something, I'm going to want to know about it. To me, it's refining the fire. I want to be a better teacher. I want to be a better person. How else am I going to know if somebody doesn't come tell me?
Right.
So I always think, even if there's a lot of feelings, there's a lot of emotion, I'm just like, God, show me that nugget that's going to change the way I am.
Yeah.
Show me that little piece and help me just forget all the riffraff that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Just instead of all the feeling, but be able to just get one sentence, that'll help you. Yeah.
I think there's two kinds of pain. There's a pain of just being attacked. It's a pain that is concerned about me. But I've already had pain with criticism that was pain because it was actually causing something that was not pleasant for my students.
Oh, okay.
And as you know, as I thought about my goals and realized my weakness and realized that, you know, this could be damaging my students, it could be causing them to struggle and stumble. That's a pain we want.
Yeah.
And
right.
It depends if it's pain because we care about what we're trying to do, or if it's pain because we care about ourselves.
Yeah. That's a good point. We should remember that.
When David was cursed by Simeon, he sort of said, perhaps God asked this guy, like, there's intervening here in this criticism against me. So, like you said, of giving a person the benefit of the doubt always, and then hopefully they would do the same thing in them being criticized. And
right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to say something?
I liked your point about not taking yourself too seriously. And I was thinking about the first year I taught school, and this was the most serious thing I'd ever done in my life by a long stretch. And I just remember taking it very seriously and taking the things that I'm called to do. And I bought new clothes and I got a new briefcase and was more careful with my hair and had some. And I remember just, and then I was teaching in Belize and everybody called me teacher and Mr. John. And that was new for me because they called me other things back where I was from. And I remember one time riding my bike home, just, you know, this wonderful teacher. And I was riding my bike home and I was holding my briefcase here. And I think maybe I was carrying something else. I was trying to ride almost just with barely one hand, you know, riding along. And here was a puddle just right in my way. And I went to grab with my left hand, which I think was the front brake, which is a little harder, and just hit it just a little too much and grabbed it and just somersaulted my briefcase and everything and my nice clothes and all right into the puddle. And I thought, ah, this great teacher. And the thing is, I still take my job very seriously, but I think it's good for us not to take ourselves too seriously. So take your job seriously. Don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
Because it's bigger than you.
Right. Yeah, I've struggled to find that balance. That's a good way to say it. Take the job seriously, but not yourself. Because we don't want people just lollygagging around like, no, this isn't a big deal, whatever. That's the other side of it. Okay, thanks a lot for your attention. I guess that's it.